Welcome back to another exciting episode of The Network Effect. I'm absolutely thrilled to bring you episode 7, where we deep dive into the heart of financial innovation. We're coming straight from InvestOps 2024 in Orlando, and we've had the privilege of sitting down with Adam Watson from BNY Mellon. We have our very own Pardeep Castles with him as well, and they start the conversation off by talking about market trends.
So I think what we're seeing, especially across the last 12 to 18 months, and certainly for the next year to two out, is a few things. So we've been talking for a long time around collaboration, this idea of democratizing data and using data to drive value. And I think that's really shifted more into harnessing the power of data is great, but creating kind of a collaborative ecosystem that allows our clients and ourselves and different parties within the ecosystem to collaborate real time on data is a huge focus on that. I'd say the other two things that we're seeing across our client base is really a focus on resiliency. And resiliency doesn't quite mean what it used to mean, to the extent of in the event that something happens, can you react? Can you think on your feet and adapt to that? It's more about how do you, again, looking at data, how do you use data to predict the potential events, or, you know, not wait for something to happen, then react to it, but use smart technologies and the data that we've got available to draw our attention to risk before it becomes financially, reputationally, or operationally damaging. And it kind of leads into the third point around like this concept of data as an asset class. It's not just something, it's not a commodity anymore. It's something that we need to create value out of. But creating value can come in a number of different ways.
That makes sense. And then I think we've got the kind of ongoing regulatory landscape as well, right? Just constantly evolving. So we've got T1 kicking in North America, Mexico, under discussion in the UK.
Canada.
North America.
Fair.
Sorry, Canadians. We have Europe, obviously discussions taking place across ESMA, the CSDR refit that's coming, Basel III that's coming. I think there's another MiFID round on its way. So I think when we're discussing the industry landscape, everything you've said is right, but there's just this constant churn of regulatory pressure, I think, that we're operating under.
Yeah, my view is they're really tailwinds. Right? These are catalysts to drive innovation, to look at friction in the investment life cycle and the ecosystem, and drive us all to think differently about how we deliver value to an underlying investor. Ultimately, that's who we're here to support, right? Whether you're an asset owner, pension fund, or a buy-side client, obviously we're here for that particular reason. But it's really, at least from our perspective, like we've been in the data and analytics business for a long time. We've been looking at using digital technologies for a long time and starting to rethink about creating value through data. So we've been at this for a while. But so these tailwinds for us, whether it be T1, T0, or interest rate conditions, macroeconomic events, all those things that are happening, at least from my perspective, are just great catalysts to create a narrative and have a conversation with the client around how you drive operational efficiency, how you look at the kind of interjection of digital and traditional technologies to create something that's really valuable from an operating model perspective. We use this phrase with clients, like, we're all about delivering a custody platform for now, but also for the future. And I think these kind of things that are happening at a macro level are just great tailwinds for us to have that conversation.
I think looking at them as tailwinds is just a really interesting insight into how BNY Mellon function.
Yes.
Because obviously there are other organizations out there for whom these feel more like an onerous burden.
Yeah.
So the number of firms that put tactical or even no solutions in place to manage their CSDR workflow, the 30% roughly of value exchange survey respondents who recently said that they don't expect to have their T1 solution live in time for T1 go live. So yeah, I find it interesting that for you guys, it's viewed as a catalyst that propels something that's already in flight, whereas I think other organizations are potentially, across buy and sell side, almost like struggling to keep up with the pace of it.
And we're lucky to a certain extent that, so the way in which we operate from a pure architecture perspective, and look at, there are some examples where it's not the case, but by and large, all of the core businesses use the same technical architecture. Mm-hmm. So when I build a piece of functionality or we deploy a piece of kit for my asset servicing clients, guess what? Clearance and collateral management use the same custody platform. So does capital markets. So does our investment managers. So the ability to deploy those enhancements at scale, both when we're doing stuff to innovate for our clients, but also when those other businesses come to us and say, here's what our clients are thinking about, it allows us to be a little more flexible on delivering value across kind of different client set and thinking about things just a little differently. I also think there's value in, you know, I always tell my team, like, we need to be solutions mindset. So, you know, solution is not a verb. It's a peeve of mine from a British language perspective. But when we do talk to clients, you know, coming in with a, you know, I think gone are the days where we can be 95% effective and sell clients something we think they want. What we're starting to see across kind of last year to 3 years is really, no, come to me, collaborate, actually have the strength of character and the passion to ask questions around, well, what's the real problem statement? Yep. What does success look like? What's your outcome? Which, you know, back to this conversation here, certainly from the first day I met your organization, there seemed to be a kind of cultural alignment of like a natural inquisition to understand where we can collaboratively deliver on an outcome. Totally. Because we understand the problem statement versus trying to be 95% effective but never quite getting it.
And I think for me that was a very interesting learning curve, because I obviously joined Access FinTech from investment operations, and one of the first kind of tasks I was given was to set up our CSDR program and run with that. And our entire CSDR offering came from understanding what the market needed. Yeah. So rather than us designing in a black box and coming out and saying, hey, we think we fixed this for you, we were running working groups for 200 people at a time. Yeah. So yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I think we are, as a firm, it's just in our DNA to be naturally curious, inquisitive, to partner with the organizations who are clients of ours, and actually beyond that as well. Like, we invite anybody who wants to join a working group into a working group and help them think through problem statements. And if they end up going down a different route, then they do, and that's okay. But for us, bringing organizations together in order to understand a shared problem rather than them all trying to yeah. solve in silo is a really important part of it.
There's a certain level of vulnerability in being confident enough to approach a situation to understand that you might not have the outcome, right? Yeah. You might not have the capability. But I think certainly from my perspective, you know, the way we think of kind of a digital ecosystem of the future isn't that I'm going to build and own the proprietary IP for everything. That's just, it's not the future. Do we think that, you know, our clients will, our CEO talks about bringing the bank to our clients. So do I think there is a continued push towards doing business with the right people and starting to think about how can I solve problems across capital markets, investment management, collateral management, asset servicing, all these different lines of business, 100%. But also there is a vulnerability and honesty to say, am I the right person to build this piece of kit to deliver on this outcome? And so certainly from my perspective is, you know, think of us as kind of the backbone custodial platform across the whole organization. There are going to be examples, whether it be loans processing, which we obviously done with you guys, or whether it be asset servicing, cap markets, where it makes more sense to use an industry participant that has the ability at least to deliver on an mm-hmm. expected outcome, because we mutually understand what that is.
And then we in turn, when we know that we're not going to complete or support 100% of that challenge, we form partnerships with other vendors. Correct, and yeah. say, rather than us setting up in competition with these guys, they're doing a great job of X. So we're actually going to go out, we're going to form a partnership, and we're going to provide a shared service to you that we think is going to meet this challenge in a comprehensive way, rather than, to your point, at 90-95%.
Yeah. And look, we're speaking to more and more clients now around, you know, in the data normalization space, there's value in that. There's always been value in that. But to a certain extent, the evolution and the maturity of that as a core function has shifted now. And what we're starting to see more is, look, it's great. And actually this year, a year ago at InvestOps, we talked a lot about the buy side struggling with context and mm-hmm. struggling with insight into that data. And this idea of how can you give me a persona-driven data model that makes sure that if I'm a day-to-day investment operations person, I'm getting real-time data. But if I'm a performance measurement or I'm an accountant, whatever, that I might need a different set of data. And it's actually potentially harmful to give me the wrong data. Yeah. Now we're shifting more into AI, different technologies. How do we use generative AI? Can we start to integrate large language modeling? But more than that, around how can we create, so I've got context, I've got insights, great. How can I shift into actually driving action?
Yeah.
And then that action is the, you know, ultimately from my perspective, is the success criteria on, are we ready for what global markets are going to throw at us? Whether that be resiliency, T+1, T0, global markets in T+1, whatever it might be. The key, at least for us, is normalize that data, get into a single point where you can then create the workflow and that action off that is hugely beneficial.
Yeah, and obviously that's exactly what we're here to do, right? I think maybe 3 years ago, we were using the phrase vendor lake, and then we hit a point where we kind of went, that actually doesn't really explain what we're doing. So certainly when I'm kind of working with clients or potential clients, one of the things that we discuss is our goal here isn't just to bring all of this data into one place and then kind of hand it over and say, there's your data.
Yeah.
The normalization layer is so critically important. And as much as AI exists, you know, at this point in time, it functions based on what you can feed it. So a lot of our normalization is initially done manually.
Yeah.
And we are obviously consuming a huge amount of data now. So I think we're at close to 70% of all equity and fixed income trades globally, in addition to loans books, as you've mentioned, and cash payment and kind of other transaction types as well. But in that security space alone, we normalize something like 70,000 data points every single day.
Yeah.
We're just constantly cleansing this data so that it is useful and usable. And interestingly, it brings collaboration back into it, because what we're aiming to do there is not just normalize it for BNY Mellon to use or for one of your clients to use, but to make it shareable across everybody it impacts so that they can leverage it to meet whatever need they need to meet.
But I think that's the natural evolution of data aggregation, data normalization, creating a well-hydrated data lake. The natural evolution of that is, okay, so once I've, the amount of times I've had conversations with people where it's, okay, once I've got that data, well, then what do I do? Right, like, am I necessarily...
It's the beginning, not the end, right?
It's the facilitator, it's the foundation to deliver value. But, you know, back to the previous comment around, you know, we can't deliver something to, here's a load of data, go figure it out. The push and the challenge from our client base now is, okay, back to the previous point of, well, what's my problem statement? What are real world problems?
Yeah.
Like, if we take something simple, right? So the US market, 28th, we go to T+1. If I'm a portfolio manager, have I necessarily historically taken an understanding of where my inventory is? So if I'm selling securities in the DTC, I might have actually bought those 6, 12, 18 months ago in Euroclear. So I don't know where those shares are in a particular market. They might be in a different securities depository. If you compress the settlement time, what we're seeing is, okay, so now I'm selling those securities into DTC. I go through my end of day recon. I find out tomorrow morning or potentially late in the afternoon that I've got a break, and now I have to move that inventory. So again, having that data in one central place, having it normalized, having it readily accessible in a kind of multi-channel, channel agnostic delivery approach, where we can create the context and the insight. But the action there is, okay, you send me a trade.
Yeah.
Within seconds, I should be able to tell you, is there a problem with that trade? I can also give you the insight, hey, here's where the inventory is.
Yeah.
But then driving that action to say, would you like us to move that from Euroclear to DTC, my example,
and I think
it's hugely valuable.
Totally. And I think both of our organizations are approaching this in very similar ways. So BNY Mellon obviously have quite a well-founded, well-formed fail prediction tool. Access Fintech, we have our own that sits across, sorry, Adam, but multiple custodians and prime brokers. So we're kind of striving for the same thing, and it allows us to go to shared clients, mutual clients, and explain that we can take all of your amazing output but feed it into an infrastructure that creates a similar output across the rest of their providers.
But the predictive analytics is an interesting one. So, you know, we're across 103 markets. The last market we're looking to close out early this year. Again, for me, when I look at that as a capability, it's an interesting data point. Cool, thanks. What we found, though, is that actually integrating that into clients' operating models has gone one of three ways. Your first way is, okay, I now know how to prioritize my workload.
Yep.
Great. My second way, which is really interesting, is, well, I actually now know where to prioritize my operational teams. So rather than have operational teams and locations to support the markets where we're investing or the markets where we're domiciled or where the funds are domiciled, we're actually seeing, is there a way in which we can go to more of a construction line methodology of just in time? So can I use the analytics to say, well, actually, don't look at these transactions that have a high probability of settlement. Focus on these ones that have a high probability of failure.
Totally.
Engage with your broker community. But then you can start laying on your operational footprint to understand, do we actually need to rethink about where my operational teams are? The third one, which is where we believe we can add a ton of value, is what's the cost of doing nothing? So what's the cost of failure?
Yeah.
Is it a CSDR penalty market? Is it a buy-in market? What are the interest conditions in this market? And then where it gets really interesting for us is, how can I, again, bring the bank to the client to say, okay, so I've given you the data, context, insight.
Yep.
The action is you need to take some action, but it's not something you can do in yourself. So how do I bring the bank to you, whether it be securities lending program, collateral management for cash shorts, whatever it might be.
Yep.
How do I bring the bank to you to help you solve for whatever that problem statement is?
And I guess we're then, again, just reinforcing that similar footprint, right? Here's a transaction. We can see both sides of it. We're telling you in real time that this is likely to fail. So I think your BNY Mellon's predictive analytics, correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of based on historic patterns that you use to predict the future.
Yep.
Whereas what we do is a real-time assessment based on the transactions as they hit us and the shape that they've taken in that moment in time. So we're churning that analysis continually, which feeds into probably the same three things that you've just said, right? What's a priority right now? How do I prioritize my book of work? Great. Where what we've done over the last kind of 6 to 9 months is super interesting is that we've actually gone into client organizations and helped them reshape their operational footprint.
Yeah.
And said, guys, you have a sales management team of X number of people. We're now giving you enough output that if you move 3 of them or 5 of them or whatever into a pre-settlement check, you're actually going to be able to capture and resolve a specific number of issues and prevent that fail from even occurring in the first instance. So I think we've seen organizations at this stage achieve up to 40% fail reduction based on that. For me, the next step is learn from it.
Yes.
Right? If there is something that is breaking over and over again, in this account, it's always the wrong PSEP for that market, the wrong SSIs. We need to get to a point of flushing that level of insight out, go back to the root, course correct it, and then this becomes a smoother and smoother process.
Yeah, so we, a couple of things there. So I think, I grew up in operations. I spent a ton of time in my early days in the financial sector, and we always considered ourselves to be a T+1 organization of like, we would get our breaks in the morning, we'd churn through them, we would call brokers, and it was a very manual email phone conversation, chasing your friend at this organization to get a response. You would go into
and
the mainframe.
And they do become friends when you're talking to them that much, right?
Of course, you speak to the same people every day, and you know who's responsive, and you kind of know based off proximity to market close, which ones you need to go forward with. What we're seeing isn't necessarily a piece of kit capability that will allow you to. It's not a shrinkage and FTE saving kind of exercise. It's more of a, everybody's under pressures to do more for less.
Yeah.
Everybody's under, we want to grow, we want to add value, but we want to do it in a resilient and an operationally efficient way. But how can you start to use data to actually allow our investment operations clients, either clients or internally at BNY Mellon, to spend less time doing menial tasks, what's the status of my trade, these kind of like something.
Let me file some emails.
Right. Versus the more, let me actually focus the time on the complex stuff so that we can start to add value. And again, back to my risk comment, actually mitigate risk because I'm proactively servicing you rather than spending, a wealth of time responding to things that essentially, if you use and integrate data properly, I always tell clients the best question is the one that never has to happen.
Yeah.
So back to that kind of collaboration and ecosystem integration, it's hugely important.
I'm going to remember that the next time you ask me a question.
You can steal it. Thanks. You can have it.
But it is the number of, I'm just thinking about that question point, the number of emails that are churning through the market at the moment is abhorrent. It's so bad. And every organization that we speak to is feeling the impact of that.
But it's a swivel chair risk, right? Like, it's great if you and I can collaborate via whatever digital channel we've got. But if I'm going and dealing with somebody else and I have to swivel chair and go write an email, that's time decay.
Yeah.
So then I've got to transcribe that into a channel back to you. So when you're doing that at scale across, potentially a middle office provider, a custodial bank, a buy side, a sell side, there are so many parties involved in the transaction. Your ability in a matter of hours to resolve exceptions is going to be very difficult.
Yeah.
So having that kind of collaborative ecosystem integration is hugely important. I also think candidly that we're kind of benefiting from, we've hit critical mass in the financial technology space. I'm not seeing the emergence of new technologies from an organizational perspective as fast as maybe we were 2019, 2020. Yeah. It feels to me like the financial tech space has kind of stabled out a little bit. We're seeing the industry players that are kind of stepping forward and saying, look, we're the ones that are going to democratize data. we can all talk to each other.
Yeah.
We're not kind of staying in our lane and saying no, we're not going to collaborate. So from our perspective, like, we're kind of seeing where the clients are landing and saying, okay, you know, back to that channel agnostic strategy, my job is to make sure I can keep you native in your tech of choice while I stay native in mine.
Totally.
So it's no good me saying I can integrate this data, but you have to take it via an API.
Yeah.
Because you might not be API ready. But if you're integrated with Access FinTech, well, guess what? We've got a big pipe that integrates with Access FinTech.
Yeah.
So we'll just turn you on and we'll put in permission it that way. But I think also, again, back to the vulnerability question or vulnerability statement, being vulnerable enough to say why and being open enough to say, like, what's your problem statement? And then also being cognizant that there's not always a one answer, one size fits all solution when it comes to our clients' data channels. There's so much going on in this ecosystem. You kind of have to be a bit flexible about how you deliver the outcome.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what I was going to come on to next, because I think our starting point, so when I joined Access FinTech in kind of 2019 through to 2020, 2021, it was very UI focused, right? So we have this user interface, we put a lot of effort into it. It's probably much more advanced than a lot of the user interfaces that were on the street at the time. And what we've realized over time is that actually the power of what we do is in the data. So if you want that to hit a different user interface, if you want us to feed it back to you through an API, through Kafka, through whatever, we're ready and willing to do that and are doing it for multiple organizations today, right? Scheduled reporting, all of it's achievable. And really, it's this kind of pivot even in our own thinking.
But it's the connection, right? It's the connection of data. Totally. Like, we were talking about this before, this idea, you know, I used a simple example earlier of selling in the DTC and holding the inventory in Euroclear. But if you take that one step further, if I bought that security in Euroclear against GBP, so now I've got a currency mismatch, or if there's a record date tomorrow that's going to impact an income claim, all of these tangential things that are going to happen down the life cycle of a trade, if we connect all that data together, guess what? Now I've got something that's potentially going to happen or not going to happen. I can integrate my predictive analytics. I can do all that stuff. I can create the context.
Yeah.
Now my insight becomes, hey, if you don't resolve this, and this
action, right?
Might happen. So connecting that data together and then saying, back to my point on the, here's the cost of failure, cost of doing nothing, tying some form of tangible cost to that, you've now got to go chase a sell side client on the income reclaim, or, you know, you're going to have a whatever fail for a day that's going to occur, whatever it might be. Now you've got, that's your sweet spot. I've taken my data, I've created context, I've given rich insight, but I'm also saying, in the event you don't take an action, here is what could potentially happen.
And so we've talked so far a lot about kind of operational impact, right? You're losing time, you're going to have a fail, you're going to have a claim. But the impact is so far beyond that, right? Sure, yes. In terms of potential cash flow bottom line. And you've done quite a lot of analysis, I think, on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So if I think back, so I've been in the security services business since 2014-15. The I view the world through a kind of four persona or four dimension lens, of my first dimension being my persona. So typically, if I look back to 2014-15, that persona was typically an investment operations middle management team, where they were going through a procurement cycle, they were looking at a very specific problem statement, we need to go out to RFP, whatever. Fine. My second persona was always, well, what kind of vehicle are you using? If you're a public pension fund, corporate pension fund, sovereign wealth fund, you're a traditional 40 Act fund, you're launching UCITS FMD funds, or you're an alts fund, like there's a range of funds that you are, vehicles essentially. Then I look at, are you domestic? Are you only investing onshore? Are you investing in global markets? Are you doing emerging markets and frontier markets? What's the complexity of your portfolio, private versus public? And then when I apply those three dimensions, I look at number four, which is, there's a set of capabilities you need to be successful in your intended outcomes.
Yeah.
But the important thing there, when you talk about like who are we talking to now and how has this evolved, that persona, the very first dimension, has shifted. The outcomes and the cost of doing nothing is now not just impacting an investment operations middle or senior manager, it's potentially impacting a portfolio manager, your CIOs, your CFOs, your risk officers who are looking at it from a risk perspective. So the impact of doing nothing or of operational inefficiencies isn't just a bilateral conversation between me and investment operations more. It's the people we're engaging with at our clients are different.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, we do we built some operational analytics that looks at kind of a retrospective look back on inefficiencies, essentially a daily scorecard, daily KPI metrics. But the faces in the room that light up when you show that capability, I was expecting to be investment operations, middle yeah. management, senior management. It's actually not. It's the risk officers, it's the CFOs, it's the people that want to understand what macro level issues happen or are happening in our ecosystem, whether it be a third party manager, a poor performing broker, yeah. ourselves, even BNY Mellon's custodian, because they're interested in those macro level decisions that allow them to make the ecosystem better.
Yeah.
Because that's resilient, right? That's scalable. That's going to be, you know, you're not going to have any, you know, bumps in the night from a financial loss perspective. Like all yeah. of that stuff is hugely important to a different set of personas.
But I think that's because there's such an increased focus on things like capital lockup and RWA yes. and that style of conversation. And I would say that we've probably noticed a similar theme.
Yeah.
There's a certain type of conversation that we have with an organization which is very ops focused, and yes. that's what you have with your investment operations middle managers. When we hit trade compression, capital unlock, RWA, cost of trading style conversations, that definitely hits with the CFOs and kind of that layer, as you put it, because they're the ones who are paying attention to the numbers in that way.
Yeah, and some of this stuff is headwinds, tailwinds for us now, I suppose, to a certain extent, given the macroeconomic, like where the interest rates are, yeah. specifically in the US. And look, that'll change over time. And my conversation with clients is always, don't take a short-term view that the rates are going to come down and it's not going to cost me as much money. It's more about, again, back to the designing an ecosystem for now, but for the future. Guess what? They'll come back in the future as well. And it is we know that it's cyclical. Financial markets typically are. So when you look at the cost of doing nothing, the cost of failure, while it might smooth out in the short term, if you're not ready in a resilient perspective, like if you do nothing now, in the event that one of these scenarios happens or there's a stress scenario, something happens, if you're not invested in resiliency and data as kind of a backbone to your operational team, you will struggle to be, you'll be reactive rather than proactive in those yeah. scenarios when they do occur.
Which almost brings us full circle to the start of our conversation, yes. where we said we are absolutely in a situation where I recognize that BNY Mellon are looking at this as like a tailwind,
yeah.
having assessed this, but there are organizations out there who just aren't thinking in this way at this moment in time. What would you say to them?
There's an ask and a commitment. The ask is, sometimes it's tough to take a step back and look at, if you retrospectively look back and say, how efficient was I in that period of time? And what could we do to make this mutually better for all parties in the ecosystem? Sometimes that's a challenge. So the ask is, take the time to look at operational efficiency. Is still sending faxes? Have you looked at your data journey? Where are you in your data journey? How are you interacting with your sell side counterparts, with your, you know, if you're asset owner, or, you know, your buy side counterparts, you know, et cetera, et cetera. How are you interacting with your custodial banks? But then the commitment is, when you want to engage somebody, and look, I said this to someone the other day, like, we sit on a wealth of data. When you look at the transaction lifecycle from execution to settlement, a lot of the things that happen to make that successful, FX repatriation, securities lending, cash management, SSI enrichment, all that stuff, unless organizations like yourself commit to help alleviate some of that potential pain, they typically happen at the custodial bank.
Yeah.
So that ask is, look at your operating model, understand that there are pockets of inefficiencies we need to take steps to correct, but then the commitment is, we're here to help. And that help might not necessarily be, I'm going to deliver something that's 95% effective. It's understanding that you guys can add value and we can bring you into a conversation and kind of mutually collaborate.
Perfect. Adam, a pleasure, as always, having a lovely conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you.
As we wrap up an insightful episode of The Network Effect, we extend our heartfelt gratitude to Adam Watson for BNY Mellon for sharing his invaluable expertise with us, and a special thank you to InvestOps 2024 in Orlando for providing the platform for us for these enriching conversations. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated to our latest episodes and continue exploring the evolving landscape of financial technology with us. Until next time, keep innovating, keep collaborating, and keep harnessing the power of The Network Effect.